Chapter 6. Codex Compliant. Polixis.
Repeat, the line has been breached. Guard reserve units are inbound.
Polixis heard Clastus's report over the Vox just before the detonation ripped through their section of the line. Something went off just a few yards to the rear of the sector held by Squad Valorius, toppling a heap of sandbags and showering the position's defenders in a rain of dirt and ash.
Cover!
Valorius barked, more for the benefit of the Astra Militarum than the Primaris around him. More explosions followed. A mortar redoubt to the rear took a direct hit, and the next wave of debris that came raining down included thick strings of gore and torn flesh.
Xenos bombers! Valorius growled over the link. Where in Gilliman's name is the Navy?
The question remained unanswered. More detonations ripped their way across the ridgeline. Polixis saw a redoubt less than 100 paces to the south take a glancing hit, concussed guardsmen flung against their own defences, the shooting faltering as the line buckled and men clambered, dazed, back towards the firing step. A Numerian mobile artillery battery 500 yards back towards the rear of the ridge was the next position struck. The dugout blew up spectacularly, levelling a portion of the slope and decimating a Kelistan battalion holding in reserve nearby. Another Orc bomb struck dangerously close to Chevik's command dome, gutting a Chimera and horribly wounding a clutch of staff officers. A third almost wiped out Squad Nerva. It hit directly ahead of their dugout, killing a mob of the Orcs charging the position, along with almost all of the guardsmen holding it with the Ultramarines. The smoke cleared to reveal the Primaris, their armour battered, scarred and splattered with ash and blood, standing amidst an expanse of mangled human and alien remains, splintered flakboard and ripped sandbags. Polixis began to move north towards Nerva's position, his visor lighting up with 4 separate minor wounds requiring treatment. How they hadn't suffered more grievous injuries when all else around them had been reduced to ruin spoke as much of the durability of Mark X power armor and the strength of Primaris physiology as it did the guiding hand of the Emperor. Not that Polixis would have admitted as much to Castor. He moved in among the Tamarans holding the section between Nerva and Valorius, just as Ridge One's aerial defences began to hit back at the airborne attack. Hydra flak batteries interspersed among the rear line started to thud as they sent streams of tracer-guided shot into the night sky, seeking out the green-skin aircraft rattling over far above. The darkness, already lit by lasbolts and the flare of detonations, was further illuminated by laddering pillars of flak and bursts of flame where the Hydras found their mark. One of the first greenskin aircraft to be hit came apart in the sky directly north of Polixis. He stopped as he saw the aircraft's remains, wreathed in fire and black smoke, hurtling towards his position. His Genhunt sensors slowed the moment down, and he witnessed every detail in perfect clarity. The remnants of the still-turning rotorblades, the greenskin skullcliff mounting the prow of the disintegrating cockpit section, the one wing spinning slowly away, like debris, leaving a planet's orbit riddled with flak damage. He saw it all. His mind calculated angles and trajectories, and he realized in the time it took for one of his hearts to beat that in all likelihood, he was about to die. Then, training, reinforced by a century's experience, took over.
Down!
He bellowed at the pelt-clad Tamarans around him. He snatched the nearest two by their shoulders and hauled them onto the duckboards at the redoubt's base. Everyone else seemed to move with an aching slowness, and the world was filled with the roar of the destroyed alien aircraft as it came plummeting in to meet the ridge. At that moment, kneeling amidst the tribesmen, his head bowed and his eyes closed, Polixis realized his last thoughts were of home. He had never seen it so clearly. Another boy was at his side, stood amidst fields of golden corn that stretched in every direction, undulating gently beneath a pale blue sky. He realized that the boy was Custer, young and smiling once again. He'd forgotten that vista until that moment, until the point of death. To his own surprise, it brought a small, private smile to his lips. The aircraft hit. The world seemed to turn and spin, and he allowed his Lyman's ear to bring him blessed silence, cancelling out the horrid fury of the impact and the explosions which followed. His mind reset, like a newly initiated cogitator block running through its basic systems. He was aware that he'd been thrown onto his side against the redoubt's rear wall, and that part of it had collapsed on top of him. He was aware of a body, ripped and bloody, striking him after he landed. He felt pain in his left wrist and right thigh, and his visor lit with warnings. Penetrative wounds, neither serious. A regular human would have been left stunned and grievously injured, but the mind of a Primaris could not be impaired by shock or trauma. Even as he landed, Polixus was aware that the wreckage had come down directly in front of and behind where he'd been crouched. Fire and metal had ripped through the redoubt, shredding the lightly armoured Tamarins and pulverizing the defensive works. The apothecary was back up just seconds after the initial impact, throwing aside the debris that had covered him and shrugging off the gory remains of the guardsman who'd been beside him when the plane had hammered through. He paused briefly to tug the sliver of twisted metal that had sliced into his left vambrace free. The pulse of blood over the white ceramite clogged immediately, and he felt the sudden pain dull as his body blocked it out. He half turned to assess his situation. Flames and black smoke had engulfed this section of the line. The remains of what looked like part of the Orc plane's fuselage lay embedded in the dirt barely a dozen feet away, fire licking from its wrecked husk. There was nobody alive in the immediate vicinity. Nobody human, anyway. There were Orcs in the remains of the redoubt. The mobs attacking the Tamaran positions had taken advantage of the destruction unleashed by the wreckage, just as they'd done all along the line, using the reduction in Imperial firepower to cover the last few yards. Polixus stood alone. He didn't hesitate. His gladius was in his fist in an instant, spearing through an Orc's throat as it ran blindly through the smoke and ash, leaving it impaled and twitching as hot, dark blood jetted over the Ultramarine's forearm. He ripped the blade free and put two bolt rounds into the torso of a second Orc scrambling into the redoubt. The lack of visibility made Polixus feel as though he were the only one left defending the entire ridgeline. The thought sent fresh determination surging through his mind. He would hold this place alone if he had to. "Come and die, Xenos scum!" Two more Orcs came at him out of the smoke, bellowing, cleavers raised. He tore open the stomach of one with a point-blank bolt round, then turned aside the swing of the other with his gladius. The first came on despite its hideous injury, seeming oblivious to the thick intestinal strings spilling from its split gut as it tried to hack off the apothecary's right arm. He took the hit on his pauldron and drove the greenskin back with his superior height and bulk, a haymaker swing of his gladius keeping the second orc at bay as it recovered from its first strike. Behind them, he could see more rushing from the pall, tusks bared and weapons raised. There was no sign of any sort of Imperial reserve to his rear. Teeth gritted, he fought on. Castor. The first Orc to breach the Imperial defences on Ridge 1 had its skull split open by Salve Imperata. Castor roared and kicked the broken corpse squarely in the stomach, sending it slamming back into the other greenskins, scrambling in its wake. Either side of him, Clastus's intercessors had switched to bolt pistols and their chainswords or gladii.
"In the name of the immortal Emperor and the restored Primarch, strike them down!"
Castor roared as energy wreathed his Crozius. The mace's skull tip slammed through the haft of an axe wielded by the next Orc to scramble up through the ash and blood. The swing carried on, pulverizing its face and shattering its tusks, even as it howled in mindless alien fury. Castor brought his absolver up as he recovered from the killing strike. The heavy bolt pistol bucked in his gauntlet, its booming report every bit as fearsome as the chaplain's roared battle prayers. Still the Orcs came, though, trampling their dead and their wounded, seemingly unable to do anything other than fling themselves against the humans' defences. Castor would have had it no other way. A crude chainsword struck the chaplain's right pauldron, juddering off the black ceramite with a screech of metal and a shower of sparks. At the same time, a stray round struck his helmet, ricocheting away and snapping his head to the left. He recovered immediately, snarling an oath of vengeance on behalf of his power armor as he brought Salve Imperata crashing down again. More orcs broke beneath his fury. Grey brain matter and shattered bone befouled his vestments and dripped from the stylized rib bones of his breastplate. He pressed forwards to the edge of the redoubt's remains, planting himself amidst the torn sandbags and broken bodies of the Faeburn vanquishers as he reaped with his Crozius Arcanum. Still the Xenos came, bellowing and grunting, eyes filled with manic fury. They thought nothing of death, nothing of pain or injury. All they desired was to fight. Custer welcomed each and every one, a litany on his lips. In the end, it was the Imperial Guard and not the Ultramarines who sealed the breach. A squad of Pyran veterans, including a trio of heavy flamer teams, pushed up from the south, spears of liquid flame engulfing those mobs still trying to force their way into the opening. Greenskin roars turned to howls of agony as flesh sloughed off and innards liquefied, and billows of black smoke brought the gut-turning stench of charred alien meat with it. Castor snapped the neck of an orc that was ablaze from head to foot, half lifting the alien as flames licked around his black gauntlet before flinging it back down the ridge. Ahead of him, the breach had been turned into a wall of fire, filled with the writhing, blackened forms of burning Xenos. The urge to burst through the flames and carry the fight to those beyond was almost more than Castor could bear. He forced himself to take a step back and deactivate his mace. Either side of him, Clastis and the intercessors who had held the breach with him, Fadius, Aneris, and Quiris, were all befouled with alien blood, their armor battered and rent. They'd carpeted the redoubt's scarred remains with orc corpses, their gladii and the teeth of their chainblades dripping with thick strings of Xenos viscera. The Imperial Guard moving in to secure the position were forced to tread on the bodies of the Greenskins as they moved to set up a new firebase.
"Section 5 is secured," Custer voxed to Tyrannus, pinging the message through the Astra Militarum's command channels. "I am relocating."
He turned his attention to Clastis and his three intercessors, briefly grasping the forearm of each in turn.
"Well fought, brothers," he intoned. "We have done the Emperor's work here today. Hold this position."
While the flames had brought a respite around him, a glance at the state of the burst map on his visor told the chaplain that the opposite was true across the rest of the line. The chaos of a full-pitched battle was never adequately represented on charts or displays, even in real time, but what data that was available showed that well over half of the Imperial reserves had been committed at breach points all along Ridge 1. Four of the Fulminata's five combat squads had been or were currently engaged in close combat. Only Domitian's Hellblasters were keeping the Greenskins storming their section of the line at bay. The raw firepower of the plasma weapons decimating the mobs as rapidly as they gained ground. It was carnage, brought on by the destruction wreaked by the Greenskins' aerial attacks. The worst of the bombing runs seemed to have passed. Those aircraft not brought down were likely returning to their fleet to refuel and rearm. But they had done more than enough damage. The ridgeline was close to breaking point.
"Salve, redeploy to Sector 1, crackled the voice of Lieutenant Tyrannus over the private link. "Prime Tertiary requires immediate close support."
Castor was about to confirm the redeployment orders when a sigil on the burst map caught his eye. It was his brother's, and not only had it become separated from those belonging to the nearest squads, Nerva and Valorius, but the scroll feed indicated that the apothecary was engaged in hand-to-hand combat. Custer immediately turned south, keeping the channel to Tyrannus open as he went.
"Prime Alpha, Helix has been isolated. I am moving to support."
Polixis. This time there were too many. The wreckage of the dugout was flooding with Greenskins, trampling over their own dead as they poured into the gap torn in the Imperial line. Polixis stood firm in their midst, fighting with a cold, brutal efficiency. His focus was on his gladius, his every motion dedicated to its use as a death-dealing tool. It tore jugulars and carved open faces, sliced hamstrings and took out eyes with clinical precision. Greenskins were hideously difficult beasts to kill, their natural toughness and near immunity to both pain and fear was almost on a par with the Adeptus Astartes. Polixus made clean, hard killing blows where he could, and disabled those he could not, leaving them clawing the ash, blind or unable to stand. Alien blood ran thick and black down the venal of his short sword, and pattered against his armor like foul, hot rain. On he fought, letting his armor take the inevitable blows that pierced his guard, trusting in the heavy Mark X plates.
"This is Polixus. My sector is breached," he snapped between blows, checking the Vox's transmitter in the corner of one eye. It was unresponsive. He fought on. It could only last so long. More orcs came for him, drawn as much by the cold, bloody resistance of a single determined warrior as by their desire to overrun the fracturing Imperial line. Polixus's subconscious, still assessing the situation beneath the endless, tireless work of his sword arm, registered a difference in the greenskins surrounding him. A flurry of fresh blows fell at him from behind, and he turned in a tight, vicious circle, gladius swinging, to find another wave of orcs rushing the redoubt. These ones were coming from the rear of the ridge, though, rather than the front slope, and they were clad in grimy camo capes and spotting gear. Worse were their blades. They were slick with fresh blood. Polixus realized why the Imperial Guard hadn't flooded the section with reinforcements. The orcs now rushing him had used the breach to outflank and cut off whatever reserves had been moving up from behind. More blows rained down on the stranded apothecary. He turned aside the cleaver of one greenskin and slashed the throat of another before returning to the first, driving it back into the press with a trio of strikes towards its lower torso, before flicking the gladius up to take it in the thorax. In the 4 seconds it took to do so, his armor registered another 3 hits, 2 ringing off his backpack, and another nicking the rear of his knee, piercing the joint seal, but not drawing blood. The Vox finally ticked active on his visor. He managed to say a single word. "Castor!"
A slight overextension into a thrust, and one of the Xenos's serrated blades cut up and under his right pauldron. A jab of pain and fresh blood stained his white armor red. He grunted and twisted into the stab, using his superior bulk to smash the alien back and break its grip on its knife at the same time as he ripped his sword free from the skull of another. Bisected brain matter splattered those around as he stabbed once, twice, 3 times into the orc's gut, hard and fast, no room for finesse or broad sweeping blows. He ploughed his sword into another's skull as he kicked the first orc down, trying to make more room, trying to force his way through the press as more strikes pounded from his backpack, pauldrons, and helmet. There was a hissing sound, followed by a violent crack. Polixus turned in time to see one of the cape-clad greenskins ramming what looked like a grok-sprong at him. Electric charge surged when its wire-coiled tip struck the apothecary's left pauldron. Power burst through his battle plate, searing through his black carapace and into his flesh and bones. He cried out, his muscles going into spasms before his jaw locked. His armor answered his pain. Servos shrieked, and his visor flared with 12 critical warnings before its display blinked offline. The greenskin pulled the prong away, but energy continued to crackle across Polixus's armor. He shuddered, his body still struggling to function in spite of the shock it has sustained. As the electricity that sparked across his battle plate started to short out, he tried to move, tried to force his aching muscles to obey. They wouldn't. At first, he thought his whole body had been paralyzed. Then he realized it was something worse. The Xenos prong hadn't only overloaded his autosensors, but had also burned through his servos, locking and immobilizing them. His armor had become a prison, and he was trapped in it, utterly helpless. The orcs rushed him. The first to lay its claws on his battle plate received the full force of the charge stored up in it, flinging it back against the bodies of its kin. The others came on regardless, bellowing with bloodthirsty excitement. Polixus tried to blink-click his visor display, but it remained blank and unresponsive. He braced himself for a rain of blows. Instead, a trio of greenskins slammed themselves bodily into him. Unable to react, he fell, hitting the bloody ash just as the orc with the prong reignited the electrodes. As pain flooded his body once again, and he felt hands gripping him, the terrible truth dawned. They weren't trying to kill him. They were trying to take him alive. Castor. Castor ran at full tilt, the platoon of Kelliston Stormers he'd requisitioned struggling to keep up. It was roughly 500 yards from the breach the chaplain had held to the locator marker representing his brother on the burst map. To get there, he had to pass through another melee next to Squad Nerva's redoubt. The Primaris burst in amongst the orcs who had fought their way over the parapet like a righteous thunderbolt, a storm of lightning-wreathed destruction that annihilated the Greenskins in a matter of seconds. As the Numerians, who'd been battling to hold the redoubt, scrambled back up to the firestep, he carried on, passing the hellblasters of Squad Domitian. Their plasma weapons were steaming, vents white-hot, dangerously close to overheating. Still they fired, though, laying down a curtain of actinic blue energy that turned mob after mob of charging greenskins into more ash to carpet the slope. Theirs was one of the few parts of the line where no Xenos had yet penetrated the defences. Beyond Domitian, Castor found a stretch of redoubts completely overrun by orcs. He charged them without any hesitation. Salve Imperata was a tool of annihilation, coursing with power. Scrap armor buckled and axe shafts splintered. Cleavers shattered and helmets were staved in with relentless, hate-fueled efficiency. The chaplain's boots ground broken alien bodies into the dirt and ash as he carried on and on, splitting skulls and breaking necks with each unstoppable overhead swing. For their own part, the orcs threw themselves at the rampant ultramarine without hesitation, their every thought bent towards their desire to fight and kill. The gigantic skull-faced warrior held no fear for them, even as he smashed his way implacably through their mobs. All he was to them was a challenge. Victory meant power, while death to them held no meaning. Their mindless tenacity was what made their race so deadly. Their blades and slug rounds had torn his vestments in half a dozen places, and almost every plate of his black armor was scraped silver in one part or another, the ceramite cut right down to the plasteel beneath. Some of the blows penetrated, but Castor didn't notice the pain before his body blocked it out. His mind was a sea of fury, driven by the need to reach Palixis. Everything else, rallying the guard, holding the ridgeline, driving back the endless Xenos tide, had been consumed by the fires of his rage. He could not fail now. To do so would spell disaster on every imaginable level. The guard didn't so much support his attack as simply follow the trail of brutalized Xenos corpses he left behind. It felt like an age, but finally, the Primaris chaplain found himself without any enemies before him. He had smashed a path of destruction through the Xenos attack. Behind him, the Numerians and Kelistani secured the remains of the redoubt, driving into the orcs amid a flurry of rapid lasfire. Castor ignored them, pressing on past the Zoyshen infantry holding the next section. The fire-streaked dust and darkness rendered visibility infuriatingly low, but the burst map sigil put Palixis just 100 yards ahead. Castor was almost there when the marker blinked from existence. It displayed neither injury warnings nor a death signifier. It simply vanished. For the first time in his life, the chaplain swore. He followed up with a roared battle litany as more greenskins appeared on the edge of the sandbag tunnel connecting the Zoyshen's position and the next section. His charge, pauldron first, slammed the first orc clean off its feet, his boots snapping its throat as he carried on, bolt pistol blazing in one fist and Crozius ignited in the other. He rounded the corner into the next dugout, and instead of more redoubts, found himself presented with a barren expanse of devastation. It looked as though a greenskin aircraft had crashed directly into the section of redoubt ahead. He'd been aware of one of their fighters, riddled with flak, roaring overhead earlier, but his mind had been too focused on repelling the assault on his own section of the line to consider exactly where the plane had come down. Now it was obvious. Burning wreckage and twisted metal had decimated the churned-up ash, and the sandbags and flakboards that had once constituted the defensive works had been scattered and torn to pieces. The area was also crawling with greenskins. The nearest turned as Castor came round the corner into the remains of the position. The Primaris took in what lay before him in a single second. Not only the carnage that had broken apart the defences, but the dozen or so green brutes struggling to heft something over what was left of the redoubt's parapet. It was a body, seemingly inert. Through the blood and grime, Castor caught the flash of white ceramite.
"Helix!"
he roared. The name amplified by his helm to such a degree that even the greenskins cringed back. He flung himself in the direction of his older brother, the last vestiges of restraint scorched from his mind by the need to reach the apothecary. The orcs that stood against him were an indistinct blur, blood and broken bone, the chaplain's whole body blazing with combat stims and raw adrenaline as he pushed himself to his limit. Castor understood failure in that moment. Even as roaring alien warriors broke and died beneath his weapon, he saw Moor hauling his blood brother beyond his reach. His mind slowed the entire situation down as his body went into overdrive, and everything was rendered with a surreal degree of clarity. He saw the skull of the orc in front of him splinter, brain matter bursting slowly upwards around Salve Imperator's head, shattered bone and broken tusks spinning away. He saw the flare of a slugger muzzle beating out a tattoo as its owner sprayed shots inaccurately over his head. He saw lasbolts searing into the press around him, punching through green flesh and rusting armor, wounds sizzling as they cauterized. He saw Polixis, his brother, being dragged like so much loot out over the parapet and down the corpse-littered slopes beyond, his captors bellowing and gesticulating triumphantly. The apothecary seemed incapable of movement, immobilized. The realization twisted Castor's gut and sent a fresh metabolic surge of adrenaline through his veins. He had to reach him. The orcs struggled with the apothecary's weight, but there were enough of them. They were hauling him away faster than Castor could force his way through their kin. For every beast he broke, another pressed itself into him, bellowing and snapping its foul maw, pounding impotently on his ribbed black armor with fists and clubs, cleavers, axes, and chain blades.
"Emperor, give me strength!"
Castor roared, knowing, even as he did so, that neither his zeal nor his transhuman body would be sufficient. He was still fighting and still praying as the Imperial Guard stormed in around him with lasbolts and bayonets, while the body of his brother disappeared out into the darkness of the ash-shrouded night. The end came with the dawn. It was a miserable, uncertain thing, a grey pall beneath an ugly orange star, its light weakened and tainted by the dust that still hung heavy in Akara's atmosphere. As the new day bled weak, watery colour back into the world, the last acts of violence played out along Ridge One, a few lasbolts snapping away into the lifting ash shroud, the rattle of a slug weapon somewhere out in the half-dark, the detonation of a final shell, its payload twitching corpses and furrowing dirt out on the slopeside. Silence followed, like the quiet that came after the last pattering raindrops of a storm. Castor knelt amidst the wreckage. The blood on his armor and vestments had congealed, leaving encrusted streaks and stains on the ancient plate. Though Imperial forces had long since retaken the breach in which he had fought, none of the mortals nearby dared approach him. Most probably assumed he was in prayer. In reality, he was searching for something. He had seen his brother taken. He had seen him incapacitated somehow and dragged away by Xenos savages. But he hadn't seen his Gladius until now. The short sword was embedded in the skull of a greenskin half buried by a mound of its dead kindred. Castor looked into its sightless eyes, into a face forever twisted into a bestial rictus of mindless hatred. Eventually, he placed one gauntlet on its thick jaw, another on the Gladius's grip, and pulled. The weapon came free with a crunch, grey brain matter oozing down its length. Castor stood and looked around. The defenders of Ridge One were blinking and sluggish in the wan light, like men awakening from a nightmare. Picket teams and skirmish chains were being thrown out down the slope, bone-weary, while officers with raw throats pressed bloodshot eyes to the rubber cowling of their magnoculars. All reports Caster could hear over the Vox said the same thing. The Orc tide had receded, pulling back with first light to the eastern edge of Shabbat, where they continued to fight amongst themselves and lick their wounds. Caster watched in silence as flamer teams were deployed to the forward slope to clean the mounds of Xenos dead piled there, and soon a thick pall of stinking black smoke hung over the remains of the Imperial line. There were no unengaged reserves left to be brought up to relieve those units still in position, but Chevik had approved a corps-wide order, Caster assumed without consulting Field Marshal Kloss, allowing commanders to stand down every second man on a rotating basis throughout the morning. Guardsmen slept where they had fought, sitting on their fire steps with their backs to dug-out walls, cradling their lasguns. A few tugged aside their respirators long enough to chew down ration bars, risking grey-throat and eye-rot for the sake of easing the ache in their bellies. Many more just sat in silence. The chaplain checked the location markers still winking across his visor display. The Fulminata remained at their posts. Tyrannus and Samson were touring the line together, speaking to each sergeant in turn. All the squads had been reduced to combat teams to cover as many of the breaches as possible. These had been further decreased by casualties sustained over the course of the night's storm assaults. According to the reports, three brothers were dead. Spurius from Nerva, Dinotar from Valorius, and Lucarius from Clastis. Three more had been badly injured. Brother Clovens had lost an arm, and Celis a hand, both from Squad Clastis, while Servio of Squad Faustus had suffered a mangled leg following the destructive work of an Orc bomber's munitions. All three were stable. The bodies and equipment of the three fallen had been taken to the rear. Caster assumed that the ranking sergeant, Nerva, had overseen the removal of their progenoids. It would have been difficult work with Polixis gone. The thought brought a cold anger with it. Castor's fists clenched, and it took long seconds to master himself, to not cry out in rage or vent his fury on the alien corpses heaped beneath him. Eventually, he stirred himself. He forced his thoughts back to the importance of his duties, murmuring a blessing to his brother's gladius and maglocking it before moving down the line. As he went from one squad to another, he paused and led the assembled battle brothers in brief prayers of thankfulness, his voice low and level as he offered up veneration to the Primarch and the Emperor. He anointed the armor and brows of those who wished for it with sacred unguent from one of his Sanctus vials, and offered additional prayers of guidance and strength alongside those who had been badly injured. Last of all, he stood over the three bodies of brothers Spurius, Dinotar, and Lucarius, laid out side by side near the rear of General Chevik's command dome, and guarded by Brother Marius. The words of the funerary rites were whipped away by the rising wind, each utterance as cold as the wasteland chill that bit through to bone and marrow. When the service was ended, Custer waited alongside the bodies. Ordinarily, he would have returned to the forward positions and looked to the faith of the Astra Militarum. At times, even the iron will of the Adeptus Astartes required guidance following battle's tempest, and there were thousands of warriors across the ridgeline without the strength lent to them by genetic enhancement. Hundreds would have benefited from the chaplain's pastorship, but he didn't move until Tyrannus returned from the redoubts and completed his briefing with Chevik and Kloss. The Primaris lieutenant saluted Castor, clenching his fist to his breastplate. The chaplain returned the gesture, but remained silent. Tyrannus spoke first.
"The reinforcements from Croton are approaching. Their outriders are a little over 2 hours from our rear echelons."
When Castor remained silent, he continued.
"Kloss is rotating the 5th and 8th Corps into reserve come nightfall, when the main column comes up. We will hold our positions here. Aerial scans show that the Greenskins are massing for another attack amidst the slum ruins, and we expect the bomber wings to return from low orbit before the end of the day."
"He was still alive," Castor said.
It was Tyrannus's turn to remain silent as the chaplain went on, as though the lieutenant hadn't been speaking.
They disabled him somehow, locked his armor, but he was alive. Of that I'm certain.
I believe you are correct, brother chaplain, Tyrannus said slowly. But they have him now. It is likely he is deep within the city's ruins, and whether he yet lives...
He does,
Castor said, a hint of fire flickering behind his softly spoken words.
I would know if he had passed on.
His loss is a grievous blow, Tyrannus said. The Fulminata have suffered enough on this world already.
I will recover him. I will go myself, and I will return him to the chapter, dead or alive.
Castor knew it would have been easy for Tyrannus to respond immediately. It would have been natural for him to order the chaplain to abandon his plan straight away, to demand he adhere to the Codex's chain of command and focus on his duty towards the rest of the Fulminata. But he was Demeter's protege, and he knew Castor. Instead of interrupting the chaplain, he held his silence while Castor continued.
The Fulminata need him. The chapter itself needs him. He is our apothecary, and he holds the legacy of us all in his hands.
He is also your blood brother, Tyrannus said, in a tone that anywhere else would have sounded almost conciliatory.
I will not deny that, Castor admitted. I will not claim that I am motivated by duty alone. My heart burns for him, for what he is assuredly suffering even now. That is why I will go alone. I will not risk any of our brotherhood in this task, and that is why I pray you also see fit to release me.
You are presumptive, brother chaplain, Tyrannus said. I understand your desire to retrieve your blood brother, and I acknowledge, too, that rescuing him would greatly benefit the Fulminata, regardless of your familial bond. But I reject your insinuation that losing you also would have little further consequence. In the past few days, we have suffered the deaths of Captain Demeter, the Company's Ancient, and Techmarine Tiberon. We have lost our standard, Extremis, and now our apothecary, not to mention almost a third of our battle brothers who have been killed or grievously wounded. To lose our chaplain as well would amount to something not far removed from a death blow.
You honor me, brother lieutenant,
Castor started, but Tyrannus continued over him. Every member of the Fulminata values your spiritual guidance and your knowledge of the chapter's creed. Every engagement we have fought has involved your presence on the front line, whether you have employed your oratory or fought in the melee itself. And I myself find no shame in admitting that I have need of you, Castor. I have been thrust into a position of command during the white heat of a fully active combat zone. It is a duty I have long prepared for, but that does not mean I am happy to simply discard you or the advice you have to offer. You are now the most senior member of this brotherhood. None of those still fighting have held their current rank for as long as you have held yours. Regardless of my position as first lieutenant or acting captain, you are as much a commander of the Fulminata now as I am.
Castor didn't have an immediate response. He let Tyrannus continue.
You place me in a difficult position. I do believe Polixis still lives, though what foul purpose would lead to the Xenos taking him alive, I can only guess. I do wish to see him rescued, both for your sake and for the sake of the Fulminata. We need him, and that will only become more apparent the longer we remain on the front lines. All that being said, allowing you to seek him out runs the risk of committing a basic Codex error, compounding pre-existing failure.
This is the nature of command, brother lieutenant, Castor said. You will rarely find yourself with an easy decision. Savor them when they come.
Brother Captain Demeter taught me the importance of finding peace with every new course, Tyrannus replied. Sound analysis followed by firm commitment to a decision is one of the core tenets of command. For that reason, I have concluded that you will not go to find Polixis. You will remain here with the Demi Company. Silence followed the lieutenant's words, interrupted only by the low moaning of the ash wind and the ruffle of Castor's vestments and scroll pieces. Tyrannus carried on. You are too valuable to risk in an operation that offers such little chance of success. Permitting you to leave would be a dereliction of my role as leader of the Fulminata. You will not go into Shebat Alpha seeking Helix. Instead, I will dispatch a Reaver team under Severus's command. They will seek his trail, and if possible extract him, dead or alive. They are ideally suited to this sort of mission. Their loss would scarcely be less of a blow to the company than my own, Castor said. That is correct, but I consider the likelihood of their return to be far greater. They are under orders to maintain their covert protocols at all times. They will be airdropped into the tombstones, and from there work their way into Shebat from the southwest over the next few days. If they cannot locate Polixis, or if they deem his extraction untenable, they will withdraw and return to us here.
I see, Castor said, forcing his voice to remain level. I pray the Emperor has guided you to this decision, Brother Lieutenant. I will ask his blessings on both you and our Reaver brethren.
My thanks, Brother Chaplain, Tyrannus said, inclining his helmeted head slightly. And my thanks also for your understanding. I will not be surprised if the Xenos return before nightfall, and when they do, I will have need of you more than ever before.
I will visit the squads once more, Castor said, and what guard regiments I can.
No, Tyrannus said, the word catching Castor by surprise. You have given much these past few days, Brother Chaplain. I believe it would be best if you sought a moment of personal reflection. The Xenos will take some hours to build their strength once more, and I have seen to the rest of the Fulminata. Go and quieten your mind. We will have need of you soon enough.
Very well, Brother Lieutenant, Castor said.
Though the urge to continue walking the line and venting his anger was strong, he realized the lieutenant's suggestion was a good one. He needed peace, if only for a while. Tyrannus dismissed him, and he passed out towards the rear of the Imperial lines. It felt strange to be suddenly alone, after the cramped environment of redoubts and bulwarks, flakboards and sandbags. The ash wastes stretched away from him, flat desolation interspersed with thickly coated boulders and wiry, grey-caked rot roots. He pressed on into it, his boots sinking heavily into the soft, shifting soil. The targeting matrices of his visor bounced across his display, seeking hostile contacts, seeking anything at all that it could lock onto. The only interesting thing it found to highlight was Castor's destination, the smoking wreckage of an Orc aircraft brought down the night before and left burning out in the wastes. It had ploughed a long furrow when it had crashed. Both its wings were gone, and its tail section had come away, buried in the grey soil 100 yards away. What remained of the fuselage lay at the end of its destructive ditch, burned out, smoke still coiling from its half-buried nose grill. Castor circled the mangled cockpit. He found 3 bodies within, charred and blackened beyond recognition, the skeletal fists of one still clamped around the aircraft's flight stick. He mounted the fuselage, the metal groaning under his weight. Once atop it, he sat, his legs folded, the wind tugging at his vestments. Once seated, he reached down and pulled his copy of the Lectato Ultramar onto his lap, along with its iron key. Both hung from the heavy consecrated chains wrapped around his waist, fastened there, even in the heat of battle. The Lectato itself was a mighty tome, its covers protected by a layer of flak plate stitched into the red leather, its pages bound by an ornate plasteel lock clamp. An ordinary human would have struggled to even lift it,
but Castor could carry it easily enough in the crook of one elbow, and had long grown accustomed to its unwieldy bulk, whether in or out of combat. It had broken the skulls of a number of heretics and Xenos in the 6 decades since he had finished inscribing and binding it. He slotted the key in and unlocked the cover clamp, opening the weighty vellum pages to the place marked by a black strip of velvet. It felt like an age since he had consulted the book. He found himself missing the dark, weighty stillness of the chapel of the Dioscuri. It was the place of worship he tended to aboard the Spear of Macragge, and it remained the closest thing to home he had left in the galaxy. He banished such thoughts, silently chiding himself for his weakness. Sentimentality was a sin, at times a grievous one. It dulled the honed blade and softened minds that were required to remain forever battle-keen. It had no place in the hearts of a Primaris. He looked down at the last passage he had marked, one digit following the words, as it had done ever since his days as a notary. It was a sermon from the 12 Nights of Absolution by Past Master Antonio Polaris. The short homily stressed the importance of the acceptance of failure and the need for salvation. The acceptance that none were perfect in the Emperor's sight, and none could truly live up to the tenets of the Codex without spot or blemish. Acceptance did not mean that a warrior of the chapter acknowledged any lesser effort, but it guarded against the multitude of heresies that could stem from the frustration that so often haunted brothers of the Adeptus Astartes. Anger, confusion, and bitterness all reared their ugly heads when a Jenhance champion accustomed to victory suffered a severe or sudden setback. Accommodating failure was one of the hardest lessons, especially for a Primaris. Castor pondered the words, confronting his own failures since his arrival on Ikara. The loss of first Captain Demeter, and then Polixis, and his own inability to help either of them. He exposed the white heat of his rage and disappointment, and allowed it to cool. Attaining detachment, removing himself from the present, and analyzing his own thoughts and actions, were skills that had always come more naturally to Polixis. Castor envied him that. His own mind only seemed to function in the present, driven on by instinct and reflex. He found it easy enough to offer up advice on the trials of others, but when it came to his own difficulties, he so often found himself enslaved to his passions. He finished the passage, uttering the short catechism that closed Polaris's teachings. The next page offered a tactical sermon on Codex standard protocols for a battalion to division-level combat withdrawal, summarizing the salient aspects with a series of skull-headed bullet points. He read over the long memorized words without really focusing, his mind still on the previous passage and on the book as a whole. "Thank you for the instruments of your will," he murmured as he read, drawing a slow, steady reassurance from the heavy tome. At times, a warrior was guilty of only venerating his arms and armor. The Lectato was proof that a true servant of the Emperor required more. The book itself was one of half a dozen texts held in reverence by the Ultramarines. It had been the magnum opus of Master of Sanctity Balthazar Quilex, arguably the chapter's greatest spiritual leader of the 34th millennium. Using his vast knowledge and indomitable faith, he had set out to transcribe a condensed copy of what he believed to be the core tenets of the Codex Astartes. He had combined these with the foundational teachings of the chapter's reclusium to create the Lectato, a blend of the chapter's doctrine and faith. Of course, Quilex's undertaking had been controversial at the time, and remains so to the present day. Some believed the Codex, the sacred writings of their own blessed Primarch, could and should not be reduced or distilled in any way. There were others, however, who had always pointed out that the Codex itself frequently stressed adaptability and a suspicion of dogma. The view of the Codex and its teachings as more malleable had become increasingly commonplace since the return of the great Gilliman. It was a view often associated with the chapter's Primaris contingent, and while both the Primarch and the likes of Chapter Master Marnius Kalgar had been clear in their demands for cooperation between the hardliners and the adoptionists, there had been a great deal of impassioned debate over the past few decades.
Castor had always been a believer in Quilex's philosophy. That which was rigid, broke. That which bent, endured. He was living proof of that. He and every Primaris who now fought throughout the galaxy. The Imperium's dogmatic teachers would never have sanctioned his creation, would likely have destroyed his kind in their cryotanks if they had discovered them. But without the Primaris, and without the blessed Primarch's foresight, the Imperium would no longer exist. To adhere for dogma's sake alone was in itself a sin. Dogma was why the Imperium suffered now as it did. Castor knew that dogma demanded he obey Lieutenant Tyrannus. It demanded he stand with his brothers on the ridgeline and leave the salvation of his blood brother to Severus and the Reavers.
"I do not serve dogma," he murmured to himself. "I serve the living Primarch and the living Emperor."
The Fulminata would bend, but they would not break. Of that much he was certain. He knew each of his brothers. He had spoken to them in turn in the aftermath of the previous night's storm. They were vengeful and resolute. They did not need his guidance. What was more, they were being reinforced. The dust cloud to the south was testimony to the weight of the Astra Militarum forces moving up to the ridgeline from Croton. As much as Klaus would be struggling to admit it, Von Klimt was delivering on his promise to back up the ragged forces driven from Shibat, shifting the weight of Imperial efforts on Ikara to the new front. Within a week, the tenuous line along Ridge 1 would be the epicenter of sprawling defensive works 60 miles long. The Fulminata would be withdrawn and utilized in their traditional role whenever they found themselves deployed to a grinding war of attrition, as a mobile reserve used to stem breakthroughs or spearhead the counterattack when it eventually came. Such an operational stance had little need of Castor's oratory skills, at least in the short term. That was what he told himself as he turned to another passage. The losses of Captain Marcus Drado, a cautionary tale about the struggles of a former commander of the Second Company who had found his duties impeded by his desire to preserve lives. Ultimately, his decisions had only resulted in more death and misery among those he had sought to save. It served to teach the Adeptus Astartes the truth of their condition, that time and again they would be called upon to abandon those who looked to them for protection, or even worse, turn against them for the greater cause. Like all space marines, Castor knew the extent of the timeless evils that stalked humanity. Combating them required sacrifice, not the easy, honorable sacrifice made in the heat of battle for a brother in arms, but the desperate deeds that tried the soul.
"Is that the sacrifice I am being required to make now?" he asked aloud, the book still open before him. "Am I to be tried for hypocrisy, for espousing the necessity of loss among others, only to abandon everything to ease my own pain?"
Was he truly going to disobey Tyrannus and leave behind the Fulminata on a mission that would almost certainly end with his own death? He realized that his hands had clenched into fists, resting on the Lectato's pages. The insidious ash had already covered them in a thin, dusty layer. Angrily, he swiped the residue away and closed the book, the clap of the heavy cover echoing out over the wasteland. There were no easy choices, but he had made his. He dropped down from the ruined aircraft's fuselage, boots thumping in the dust. In the distance, his auto-sensors picked out a familiar thudding sound, followed by a dull crump. More followed, a far-off staccato ripple. He recognized the report of artillery, greeting the oncoming evening. The afternoon was wearing thin. He would have to hurry. Checking that the Lectato and its key were chained securely around his waist, he began to jog back towards the distant ridgeline, servos whirring, thoughts ignited once more.